This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Finally here, we've been talking about it since Monday, the appearance from Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, part of her Turnstile Summer. Hi, Shayna. How are you? Nice shirt.
Thank you. It's great to be back. It's been a minute, right?
It feels like it has. We had a short work week last week, while others, yourself included, were diligently digesting all the free agent news. So we're going to have lots of fun today, and I'll just try and take a backseat to your witty commentary as we start with the best contract or contracts, in your opinion, signed in free agency so far.
Okay, so my favorite one is actually an extension, and it's to an RFA because I think the RFA deals tend to age better than UFA deals. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it to Logan Stanko, and I love this extension. I love this fit for the Canes. I feel like I've definitely written this 10 times, so it's like I'm just going to keep regurgitating it. But if you went in a lab and wanted to create a perfect Carolina Hurricane, you're coming up with one of two players up front, and it's Jarvis or Stanko, and he is perfect for that team. And I think, you know, there's this option to test him at center, too, because we've seen him play it a little bit in Dallas. I think the potential is there for him to do it with the Canes if he could become their 2C. Incredible. If not, and he's just a top six winger, it's not a bad thing because you can kind of balance out your weaknesses if your other strengths are so overwhelmingly good. And I feel like there's the potential for that. And it's just, it's one of these contracts that looks like it can age into one of the best deals around the league.
Was it a good contract even before adding Nick Ehlers, or did it become like so good because now Carolina not only have Stankoven long-term 8 years, $6 million a year, but they add Nick Ehlers to the mix and now it makes them, even better offensively?
I like the deal beforehand. Like off the bat, it was like, that is a good piece to lock up, to do it sooner than later. They're in a really good cap position. You could see with the rising cap, the price of young forwards or young centers, if he potentially becomes that. But I think you add Ehlers into the fold and the same thing is true, right? Even if they don't have a perfect 2C, and right now they don't, you look at the wingers that they're putting together in this top six and go, okay, you could actually cook with that. Like there's potential now to be a little bit, to have the forwards we know that work within the system and now add something that goes against the grain to add a little bit more versatility.
What did you think? And just quickly, because I think one of the really good contracts, and Utah did a lot of work, a lot of good work, and we know they acquired J.J. Peterka, but, you know, they signed Brendan Tanev to a 3 years, $2.5 million AAV, like $2.5 million for Brendan Tanev. I felt like that was such a low number for me for a guy that can give you much more. So I think Utah's done well, but I like that Tanev contract in Utah.
Yeah, I think those are the contracts we see teams overpay on often. I think with the rising cap, too, it's like this trap of everyone saying, oh, it's going to be the stars that get overpaid. And the reality is that was never going to happen. It's the middle class. It's the lower class. And you could see how guys who have that playoff pedigree, especially after the Panthers win, right? And everyone's going, okay, now we need to be tougher and have a lot of bite. And it's like, yes, that's a part of it. But you also need that dynamic skill. But you could see how they could say, we're going to replicate that and overspend to do it. So if you can add a sandpaper player like that to your bottom six at a low cost, it's fine, right? If you're committing term to it, it better be at that low cost. And I think having that term kind of is what balances it out for him.
Five of my best extensions were, or contracts in general, were Tavares and Nyes in Toronto, Ehlers in Carolina, Will Cooley with the Rangers, and Dante Fabro with Columbus. Any disagreements there?
I like all of those. I mean, I think the Tavares deal, we're seeing a lot of these, you know, older players in their 30s sign these multi-year deals to suppress the cap number. I think it's a good thing. And I think that's a good price if he eventually becomes a 3C or shifts to the wing. It helps balance things out. I'm a big fan of Matty Nyes' game. I know some people have been nitpicking him in the playoffs saying, well, on the stat sheet or below the surface. And it's like, yes, but I'm sorry. This is a player you have to combine everything. I think the full picture there shows a lot of promise for him. Fabro, great fit with the Blue Jackets. I think it solidifies an important piece for them. I want to add one more into the mix. I'm going to add Mitch Marner in because I think if we saw him go 14, 15 million to go play with the Ducks, he was going to be a target. I think Vegas is such a perfect fit for him. And I think that $12 million price tag, it matches what Rantanen got. It kind of balanced out some of the flaws we know he has in the postseason. And I think that they got overblown. And I think it just makes sense for Vegas to invest that on the wings when you look at everything that they've done. I think it just makes sense for Marner to take that number to play for a contender.
Okay, well, with the best contracts always come the worst contracts. And we discussed Cody Ceci with the LA Kings, and the LA Kings
did segment is just, over.
I know. It wasn't just Cody Ceci. I feel like
Holland just went. No, it was just Cody Ceci. If that wasn't like, universal across the board on this panel, I don't know what is.
It was a lot of bad contracts. And there's always Brent Marchand giving him 6 years at 37. I felt like that was a bad contract, but whatever. Florida is going to do what Florida does. But anything that stands out more than others with you when it comes to bad contracts?
Well, the Marchand one, I don't think it's as much of a bad contract because I think those later years, yes, they'll probably LTIR him unless somebody stops them. But the part of it is you bet on the window now, and in 4 years, if you guys are bad, what do they care? They're probably going to have 3 or 4 Stanley Cup rings by then, and flags fly forever. But, so Cody Ceci, that's a bad contract. That is not the direction the Kings should be going in. Add that with Brian Dumoulin, and you have two bad contracts. Yes. Add it to the fact that I already have Joel Edmondson, and you have a one-dimensional blue line. That's not going anywhere. Great job, Ken Holland. It is so on brand, it hurts. But to be different, I have three that I wrote down. Tanner Janot.
Yes. Hey, I got one right.
I had that one too.
And listen, I get it. The Bruins aren't trying to be good this year. It doesn't matter that much, right? They're in a different phase, but it doesn't make sense in any which way. It's when the Lightning acquired him for a million draft picks, more draft picks than he had goals that year. We all laughed at the Lightning, but at least there was something sound in the strategy, right? Yes, you should spend your draft picks to contend right now. And yes, this was a player who was a year removed from scoring 20 goals and is super strong and could be that power forward if you channel him the right way. And the Lightning have a knack for it. The Bruins do not. The Bruins are not in the position to be signing these contracts. It doesn't make sense for them. I think we know what he is at this point. They don't need more of that. So that is a bad one. Another standout bad one is Ivan Provorov, who happens to be a good fit with the Blue Jackets. I agreed with their decision not to move on from him last spring. It made a lot of sense, right? Don't rock the boat. There's no need. But it's such an overpayment for what he is and where he is in his career. Then you see the deals that follow, right? If Gavrikov got $9 million, we're talking about everything differently because it recalibrates the market. That didn't happen. He got 7x7, right? So if you're signing a player as an extension so they don't hit the market to avoid those market prices and you overpay them right off the bat, it makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, our lists are the same, Shayna. I had CeCe, Janot, and Provorov on mine. So
I got one more.
I have one, so but it's a one-year deal. I have another one, but it's a one-year deal, and I don't think it's going to matter much. But it's Christian Dvorak with the Flyers, like $5 million.
Oh my
plus
God.
For one year. I know it's only a one-year deal, but
well, we have another category
million?
To get to, and it was most surprising. So I think Dvorak could have also fallen into that category, but yes. you're not too far off on that. And Shayna, I think just the way we've kind of set this segment up, unscripted, like, that's what makes the CeCe and Dumoulin situation so tough, is because of the loss of Gavrikov. So we start with best and we look at worst, and that's where it just all feels like, what happened in LA? Like, yeah, was there no chance Holland was going to be able to retain Gavrikov? Because it just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, maybe there was. I personally would have overpaid Gavrikov because you know right. what he is and how he works in that role versus two guys that, like, Cody CeCe's numbers
fine.
Are
fine. They just don't need that term and all the rest of it, right? Like, I don't know.
I don't even think they're fine at this point, though. Like, I'm going to, like, push up against this as much as possible. Like, when you mentioned worst fit, I wrote down CeCe and Dumoulin because I don't think either player should be playing the minutes that they do at this point in their careers. And now you're signing them to do a term. Brian Dumoulin already looks like he can't play matchup minutes. Cody CeCe, we've seen struggle in them for a very long time. And Ken Holland saw firsthand that it doesn't work when you want to win the Stanley Cup to have someone in that role. So now you have both of them. And yes, you could say, in theory, they're the third pair. Well, then you overpaid them. Okay, you have Drew Doughty to play those minutes. Well, isn't the idea to, you know, kind of ease his load a little bit so he doesn't have to play those heavy minutes? Like, any way you look at it, you go, it's still wrong, it's still bad, and it takes his team back when they just need some speed and some pop and some scoring. Like, hello, the blueprint should have been so clear this summer.
Yeah. And they're invested in a 40-year-old Corey Perry to fix all of that. So.
Well, they're going to lose in the Cup final. It's like, they're getting past round one.
Yeah, most surprising.
Okay. I'm going to go with Vancouver in two directions here. First of all, very surprising that they extended Brock Besser because it did seem like they destroyed that relationship. It's great to see the fact that they didn't and that they mended the fences with Brock Besser, because I think that kind of did him dirty at the deadline with some of their comments about him and the offers that they received. And it seemed like they undervalued him when it's like, first of all, you don't have a replacement. And second of all, this is your homegrown talent who, if you feel he hasn't hit his ceiling, what have you done to make sure he does that? And I just don't think that they've done it over the years. And I don't think they've appreciated what he's done. I think it's a great extension for him. I think it could have gone really poorly if it was $8 or $9 million, because we know he's, you know, he is what he is. Mm-hmm. But I think the Canucks need him. But I'm very surprised that deal worked out. The other one that surprised me is the Thatcher Demko extension, mm-hmm. because I am a big Thatcher Demko fan. I am rooting for him to rebound and be healthy enough. But at the end of the day, we know that hasn't always been the case. And he has this great season two seasons ago. Yep. You know, the terminology is a little tough at this point in the offseason. But yeah, two seasons ago, technically. And then what happens? He gets hurt and then he's not there to, you know, be the guy for his team. And then last year, he misses time, comes back and is rusty, finally gets back up and he gets hurt again. So you're doing this a year early. That's questionable because you have no idea what this season's going to look like. It's such a wild card. You do it at a high cost. So the three-year term is what saves them, but you're giving mm-hmm. him money that Connor Hellebuyck makes. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that, not just because of the Demko angle, the injury. He still had a year left. You can wait it out. You can sign him in season. But you did give Kevin Lankinen a deal this season. And Artur Shilovs was the MVP in the AHL's championship, Calder Cup. And he was the one that played in the playoffs 2 years ago. So and he has to be put on waivers. He's not waiver exempt anymore. So you've mm-hmm. got three goalies now. You're kind of in a tough place. So you've basically, although it doesn't start for another year, so maybe they just punted down the road and are going to look for it. And those contracts are usually insured and for a certain percentage. So if Demko gets hurt again, that's not a big deal. But I was very puzzled by that. For me, that was a big one. Another surprising
one. Your most surprising?
One,
yeah.
Another surprising one for me was a sign and trade. Keandre Miller.
Hey!
Getting 8 years at seven. I love Keandre Miller. 25 years old. I think he is one of those that did not get utilized in its best way in New York. And he signs and gets moved to Carolina. I was very surprised by the sign and deal and the 7.5 times 8 for Miller.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not surprised the Canes traded for him. I am surprised at the cost of the contract. When you think of the Canes' tendencies, and, you know, yes, we have to keep in mind it's the Tolski era. It's different from years past, but it does go against the grain of what they've generally done. But if I look at someone and I say, who is the best fit with their new team, I'm going to pick him. In my mind, Keandre Miller is not a $7.5 million defenseman in New York, and I don't think he would ever become it. I think they've used him the wrong way. I think we saw it this year, right? Like, okay, you don't have Jacob Trouba to drag you down. Now it's your time to shine. And I know they felt like Will Borgen was almost like the Keandre Miller whisperer who helped stabilize his game. But here's someone who has all of the raw tools, and it just feels like they haven't found the right way to channel him. I think the defensive coaching this year was so awful in New York, and it contributed to it that it really tanked his value. And they need certainty at this point, right? They need someone that they go, we know he's going to be good in this role, because we can't bet on 20 bounce backs and, you know, think this year is going to be any different. But on the other side of it, you look at it with the Canes and go, well, who has a knack for maximizing defensemen within their system? Oh, the Carolina Hurricanes. Who needs a left-handed D to play with Chatfield? The Carolina Hurricanes. And who has cap space? It makes all the sense in the world. I feel like he is such a perfect fit for them. And I think with the Canes, he can be that $7.5 million guy, right? Because it's not often you have someone that is athletic as he is, with the reach and the stride and everything. He has all the tools. I think he's going to be excellent there.
My surprises were Orloff with his 2-year deal in San Jose, just based on him going there at this stage of his career. The Miller deal, as mentioned, Vladar's, jumping up to a 3.5 per salary for 2 years in Philly, and the term for Jake Allen being 5 years in New Jersey. Those were the surprises for me. Shayna, best remaining free agent.
The list is very short.
Include RFAs. It's the only way to do it.
Oh, for including RFAs, then it's a totally different story, because I was looking up UFAs and I'm like,
that research should have ended within 30 seconds. So,
oh yeah. Okay. RFAs. I'm going to go. I know the obvious is going to be a Byron Merle Hughes. I'm going to go with Dylan Sandberg. I think he is this incredible shutdown defenseman and is everything Winnipeg needs and more. So I am very curious what that contract looks like. And then if we're going for a forward, I would be looking at McTavish. To me, he's this like interesting offer sheet candidate that I kind of want to see someone spring him out of Anaheim.
Mason McTavish has been rumored. Obviously, I think Buffalo has had some interest, and we talked about that. What did you make of the Sabres? Couple of signings, Alex Lyon, Justin Danforth. I mean, look, they traded Peterka and they have the Byram situation, but there's a couple of signings, and Lyon is probably the one that most people talk about just because of what he may have to do with Luukkonen and, you know, trying to straighten out the crease in Buffalo.
I like Lyon a lot. I think he can handle chaos really well. We know he can play behind like a bad defensive team like Detroit. He can play behind a good defensive team like the Panthers. So it's good to have someone that could be a fit regardless of how the Sabres end up looking this year. And it's not bad to have stability in one area and then you can work your way out. I think it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I feel like Detroit and Buffalo are taking these similar approaches where they're counting on changes from within to be the difference. And obviously the Sabres did have the Peterka trade and they're getting Kessler Ring, who's a really good fit. And, you know, you're getting Doan. I love that for them too. But a lot of their success is going to depend on what's there. So it's these complementary pieces that are just supposed to be that next piece to help them turn the corner.
Can Doan play top six? We had that debate yesterday. I have him in my bottom six, but Duffer was like, who knows? Maybe he could be.
I never said top six with Doan, ever. I asked where he fits on the team.
Okay. I'm saying middle six. Okay,
we'll ask the same question. Duffer did not say top six. He says, where does he fit?
Definitely middle six, but I could see him becoming a second line player. I think it was Thomas Drance who said, this is like a Brandon Hagel light. And that's in my mind. I'm going, the tenacity and the hardworking forechecking game is there. So if he can just keep refining his skill, I wonder if it could be more second line. But listen, to be a good third liner, if he's your third liner, it means your depth is so good in the top six that he doesn't fit there. That's a good strength too, right?
We got to fly. We're on every day next week. Hope you'll join us.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We're back after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal's going to be a minute. Do you have a thought on s'mores? S'mores guy?
Not worth the trouble.
It is a lot of trouble.
Not worth the trouble.
It is. That's perfectly put.
Marshmallow gets all over everything. It's really sticky. Ruins clothing. Not
to mention that you have to start a fire.
Well, yeah. I mean, I miss starting the fire. I miss sitting around the fire. I love a good fire.
I'm happy to have the rest of my family be people who all love starting fires.
Yeah, that works for you.
That's beautiful.
If you don't like it, yeah. Yeah, getting the fire going on the beach like back in the day, you know, yeah, we got to fire it up. The s'mores, I don't know, not, there's never a big, I was the guy that like, sure, let me roast the marshmallows. Ah, it's on fire. Ah, it fell off a stick. Oh, well, it's okay. I don't like marshmallows. That's me with marshmallow. Don't need it.
Don't need it. I couldn't put it any better.
I would gladly...
not worth the effort.
I like graham crackers. I like chocolate. I'd gladly eat graham crackers and chocolate. I don't need no marshmallow in there. I'm all right with it.
Sal, the question you were fully expecting to start the conversation...
Will there be s'mores on your trip to Italy?
Do you like s'mores?
Actually, I don't. I'm not a marshmallow guy.
See, there's another one. All right. Solidarity.
Remember the time we had? I had a friend who called graham crackers the perfect food, and we did like a show on that. Wow. Is that when you said cucumbers were the perfect food? Is it the same day?
Maybe.
In that hotel in Toronto?
I don't even know. That sounds right.
All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of international traveling, here's Sal Capaccio with us one day before his trip abroad. Very exciting. No real Bills news, I guess, but the number one topic of the offseason, I mean, arguably at least, has been James Cook, who somewhat surprisingly showed up for that end of minicamp to avoid fines. And we still didn't know exactly what to expect here, Sal, whether there would be a new contract or even a holdout or a hold-in. I suppose as we're now a little more than 2 weeks away, these are all still possibilities.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think when he went to the podium to talk during minicamp, it didn't really clarify anything about what where things may stand with that. The only thing we know from that is, okay, this is good. He's here. He said, I like my money. He didn't want to be fined, obviously. But he also said that he thought it was part of his kind of responsibility, right, to be there, being a team leader, which I think was really good to hear. There's no doubt about that. I think the good grace is there. That's an olive branch, right? I think whether to the fans, the organization, his teammates, you know, to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if it really resolves the overall issue that's going on.
Well, I wonder, Sal, you know, we talked a little bit about this yesterday during our show. And, you know, him saying it as plainly as he did, and I mean, and I'm not dogging him for it. I like my money. That's why mainly why I'm here. I like my money. You know, fine. I wouldn't want to get dinged $100,000 for missing 3 days where I'm not going to be asked to do a whole lot other than maybe sit here and answer these questions. That's maybe the hardest thing he had to do the whole 3 days. but it also could have been from his end, like, look, I'm doing the thing you want me to do. Good faith on my end, and I wonder if, and I only say if, because I don't know this, it doesn't have to be a big ulterior motive, but he might have been hoping that could jumpstart things, and that's maybe the only avenue to there being any tension about it I see this summer, because otherwise I think he just shows up and without a new contract and just does what he did in the spring. But if he was hoping it was going to start something and now he feels a little burned by that, then maybe he could hold in. I expect him to be here, though. Do you?
I do, based on just him showing up and the things he said.
Right.
I don't know if I expect him to necessarily do everything right away. And it could be one of those, I'll hold in for 1 day or even hold out for 1 day, right? And then, you know, make a statement or something like that. Now, we also don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Right? I mean, the other part of it that was super interesting to me was when he was asked by Sal Marinaro, I think it was, basically like about the number, $15 million, and why that's out there. And he kind of had no answer for that. He's like, it's just kind of just something we did, something I did, something I said. And I'm wondering, like, is there something going on behind the scenes where now you don't want to look like you're giving in too much if you do sign for something significantly less than that, right? I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out in a couple weeks, but I do think all options are still kind of, you know, all results here, scenarios are still on the table. Would any of us really be surprised if maybe the most surprising thing might be they actually showed up with a contract extension? Like, you know, the day they get there is, they signed James Cook to a contract extension. But I wouldn't completely rule it out. I think, you know, by him showing up, maybe he was told by the organization and his agent, hey, listen, if you really want this to happen, we need to see you here. We're not going to negotiate with you if you don't show up. Like, we need to see that, you know, you're serious about this and want to make things work, and we want to make things work.
To me, I'm not sure I want to say it's the likeliest outcome, that, but I'm sure I think it's more likely than you guys do.
Yeah, I'm more like Sal, where I would agree. I think it's the least likely scenario.
A couple of my thoughts on this, Sal, are, one, I don't know if he'll ever see that money from yesterday. We had a topic about him, and we used Mike Clay's projections for Cook's stats, which were 1,260 yards and 12 rushing touchdowns, like another banger. And like, if he happened to walk after that season, would he get $15 million then? I don't know. I mean, he's a touchdown god, maybe, but that's even weird thinking about where we were last year on him. So I just kind of think it works for everybody to get him signed to like a 3-year thing for less than that, because I don't know if he would even get that kind of money after a great year if he left.
I agree with that. I mean, it's still talking top at that time, maybe by next year, top 5 money running backs in the NFL. So he might not get that anywhere. I don't know if it's necessarily that, though. The Bills may just feel like, you know, they're not even coming close to that or approaching that, and he wants to max out his value. That could very well be the case. I mean, what do we have? War, right? Wins above replacement. And let's just say it's not wins above replacement. That's part of it. Let's take those numbers, 1,200 and something Mike Clay had. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it's not James Cook and it's Ray Davis.
how much different are the numbers, really? And like, I think that that's got to be part of the equation the Bills think, too, which is,
right. Look,
like, we have our entire offensive line back and their backups. It's very good. We have Josh Allen. Yes, he's a really good player. But if we don't have him and we go to the next guy, who's Ray Davis, how much different does that really look? And I think that's a real interesting question.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I mentioned this yesterday when we were talking about this, so I'll repeat it now to you. I think the only thing I would say, the first thing that would jump to my mind is, can Ray Davis run away from people? And a year ago, I would have told you, I'm not really sure James Cook can do that. But last year, there was another gear there, or the circumstances just fell right. However it worked, he ran away from some DBs last year. And that's to his credit. I think I've heard even McDermott say something about, you know, work he did in specific on footwork, speed work, whatever. Good for him. I don't know if Ray Davis can run away from a safety or a cornerback in the open field. But, you know, that what is that, 3 carries a year where that happens? Like, the rest of it, like, I would guess if you fed Ray Davis the volume James Cook had last year, it'd be 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. I think it's going to be, you're going to live with it for sure.
And you have Ty Johnson still, who we know is a really, Josh Allen called him the best third down back in the league. You know, part of this is too the usage of, you know, the Bills don't use James Cook a lot on third downs for,
right. You
know, reasons that they have Ty Johnson, who's very good at it, and they cut in the ball, even though James Cook, a couple of years ago, I think he is a good receiving back out of the backfield, but we also know that, you know, he's not the best pass blocker.
Right.
And he's not going to be on the field in those situations. So I think the Bills take all of that into account and say, like, we can still be a really good offense without James Cook. Yes, we are better with James Cook. I don't think anybody would doubt that. And I'm sure that Brandon Bean, this is part of the issue I have with, like, this whole conversation sometimes with fans, and the way people frame it is, you know, what do the Bills, maybe wanting to sign James Cook, like the word wanting to. The Bills want to sign James Cook. Like, I'm convinced of that. I just don't think they want to sign him for the money he wants because of the value they place on him based on all these things we're talking about.
And as you started by saying, you know, referring to his press conference, who knows how serious he is about whatever the – I mean, he's serious enough that he doesn't have a new deal yet, which would imply
that
he's looking for a real number.
Yeah, I think the thing that to me is the most in the way why I feel so much aligned with you, Sal, on it being maybe the least likely of outcomes is that he shows up and gets that contract extension is precisely how they use him. Like, I just don't think they're going to want to extend themselves to a place where a guy would have to play 70% or so of the snaps in order to make them feel like they're getting out of it what they need to get out of it. It worked too well with everybody in the roles they were in last year. So it's not like they should have a sign in the yard for, you know, spare running back wanted. Like, they're all set, and it really worked. They ran it great. They passed it well enough. It all worked. So why would I want to pay this guy money that I'm eventually going to regret at some point or another, probably, even if it's only 3 years, and it's going to be a problem on my salary cap, other than just making him happy, which that's not nothing, but it certainly shouldn't be at the front of the line of reasons I do something. I just don't see a way to him getting paid, and that sort of gets you to the question Mike asked about what the market looks like if he has another year like we just described. Does somebody, the cap's going up, does somebody, I would guess some bad team, the drought Bills, would go out and sign a $15 million a year, less than 50% of the time running back because his stats look good and our fans will love it.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with that. I was thinking the same thing as you were saying it. Like, if that happens, someone's paying them, right? It might not be the smart thing to do, but some team's going to be like, oh no, we're doing this because it's going to give juice to our fan base. And, you know, he's a name. He's a, you know, hot player in the league, so that would happen. The other reason why I think it's less likely about the contract is just Brandon Bean's own words back at the owners' meetings when he said basically like next year, like he referred to next year. It's almost like they're kind of resigned to, look, we just can't make it happen. We're not going to do it. We'll revisit it. We'll see what our contract, our cap looks like. They paid all these other guys. He said, you know, we pivoted these other guys and we realized it wasn't going to happen. So the only way that it kind of can happen to me is if James Cook's side goes, okay, well, guess what? Like, we kind of overplayed our hand, so we're going to come way down. And then maybe Brandon Bean goes, okay, well, we can do that. But I think it was almost already him telling everybody, hey, you know, it's just not going to work this year, and he's still under contract, and we'll see where it goes. On top of the fact that the way that they have treated the running back position since Brandon Bean has been the general manager, and let's be honest, it's basically worked, right? They haven't really invested. I mean, James Cook's a second-round pick, and you could say it's a really good asset. That's fine. They haven't invested a first-round pick, and they haven't gone out and spent big money on a free agent, and they haven't signed anybody to a second contract. And even though Zach Moss didn't really work out in a Bills uniform, it was, we just draft these guys, and then we kind of use them up, and then they go somewhere else, and then we draft the next one to do it. And it's Devin Singletary, and then it was Zach Moss, and then they traded him for an asset, and now it's then it's James Cook, and then it's Ray Davis. It's just kind of what they do, guys.
Yeah. What kind of read, if any, Sal, would you have on how it could or would impact the team overall if Cook – and this is not to imply that he'll be sitting in a corner pouting or being sad or, you know, I don't know, making duct taped jail cell doors like Joe Cribbs did in front of his locker.
Ooh,
or something.
What a pull.
But, like, guys are rooting for one another. They'd want, you know, Terrell Bernard got paid, Greg Rousseau got paid, Christian Benford got paid. Am I leaving out? I'm sorry if I'm skipping somebody. Khalil Shakir got paid, and James Cook is, oh, well, you're running back. Sorry. You know, that's tough, but at the same time, everyone in there is trying to, you know, do good, win the Super Bowl. Their careers all matter to them too, and they probably need James Cook pulling his weight to get where they want to go. So, like, I wonder just how that dynamic might work in the Bills locker room.
You know, it's interesting. I get the sense that where this team is now, the people they have there in the locker room, the leaders especially, I don't know if it would really matter, and they would still say, hey, we want James to get his money, and guess what? We understand, and they would support James Cook while still doing their job. I don't think anybody would be sour on him, and I don't think it would impact his relationship. Now, maybe younger players, when they were starting this whole thing, if this happened a few years ago, and I'm not even sure of this, maybe they may feel different. But I think that these guys, this group, has been, the core group here, has been in this league long enough now to kind of understand how this works. And they also love James Cook. So I think that they would still understand from both sides why this is happening and just say, but it's our job to go out there and play. And it's almost like we have to do it. What if he got hurt, right? If somebody isn't playing because they're hurt, we still have to do the same thing. And they would kind of just treat it like that.
But if you accused him of not investing enough in the running back position, would Brandon Bean take offense? This time he might actually have to agree and concede the point. With Sal Capaccio, so that it continues to be something to talk about. And who knows, maybe by the time we get to training camp in 2 weeks, it'll all be settled. Cornerback will not be. What happens at starting corner across from Benford? That you've talked about it a lot, I know, Sal, but that'll be a really interesting one to monitor through camp.
Well, I think it's the number one battle. I think it's really the only true starting position that's available on this team right now. If you want to say safety and Cole Bishop, well, that's just up to Cole Bishop. If he's healthy, he's a starting safety. I don't think there's any question in my mind about it. I could be wrong about that, but I just don't think there's a question there. You want to talk about who the fifth wide receiver is, that's fine, or what the pecking order wide receiver is, that's fine too, but we know who the guys are. We know who the main guys are. That's not the case at cornerback number two. I think Tre'Davious White is the guy that starts off taking the reps when they show up on July 23rd. And I think Max Harrison's going to have every opportunity to show what he can do by the time they get to the end of preseason, have every single chance to win that job, but you have to win it away from Tre'Davious White. And I know you could say it anyway, right? I guess what I'm saying is it's Tre'Davious White's job to lose, but to me it's really more Max Harrison's job to win is the way it comes down to me. That's the way I look at it. So, yeah, I do think it's interesting. Look, I think corner overall, guys, secondary actually is really interesting because if I'm doing a projected 53, and I'm doing this the other day, looking at it going, man, like someone's not making it. And I don't know who that is. I think DeMar Hamlin is iffy. But I think even on top of that, I'm talking corner. Is Dane Jackson a lock? No. Like, are they going to cut Dorian Strong, this kid that they just drafted? What, you know, was it a sixth-round pick, I think, Dorian Strong? You could. Mm-hmm. Yep. You don't want to lose him to waivers. You're not, obviously, Jordan Hancock's going to be on the team. I think Jamarcus Ingram and Dane Jackson, to me, as I look right now, just at the roster, are they fighting for one spot? That could very well be something we're talking about. I just think that position is really interesting.
Setting up for a possible Tre'Davious White revenge game in week one.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I
think Tre'Davious, watching him in OTAs and minicamp, like, no, I'm not telling you I think he looked like Tre'Davious White of 2019, but I just think that, you know, he was energetic, he knew what he was doing, and he didn't look out of place. And I think that's the start right there with him.
Yeah. I like that you got to be behind there, too, and Cole Bishop, because I agree with you on that front, too. I think Bishop, it would stun me if he's not the opening day starter, if it were something other than an injury. And that spot, I think, is interesting. I heard Nate and Joe this morning for a few minutes while I was heading to a very early tea time talking about the stability you would want behind whoever. Like, if Harrison is going to be that corner, and as a rookie, and you're just going to throw him in, right? He wins the job. You're still going to want as much insurance, something you can feel is as bankable as it can get. Back there, maybe, you know, you can leave Benford on his own. He's Christian Benford. He knows what he's doing here. And sure, there's times we're probably going to want to give him help, but you know what I'm getting to here. Like, the kid on the other side, if it ends up being him, heck, if it even ends up being Tre'Davious White that wins the job, you might want to be shading help on that side more. And that's where Bishop really comes in, like that you know, or Taylor Rapp. But Taylor Rapp's really not the cover guy anyway. It feels like that's going to be Bishop, and that's going to be a key cog, I think, this year.
Yeah, and I think that Cole Bishop, when they used him last year, they showed they want to use him in the box a little bit. You know, he's a physical player. He gives them a little more ability to do a little bit more on down in, down out, and any down and distance situation. They can play with him back there. So I think that he just offers a little more versatility than what they've had and what they want, and gives them an ability to kind of match up a little bit better, right? I mean, think about when he was drafted and how he covered Dalton Kincaid in college, and Dalton's like, yeah, like he admitted that like he had the better of me in college. And, you know, not a lot of people did necessarily. Dalton Kincaid was a really good college player, but in practice, you know, this kid was very good at what he did. So I think matchup specific, Cole Bishop becomes really important as well. It's an interesting spot because, like, I think they normally keep four safeties on the roster. You could go to a fifth, there's no doubt, but then you're probably taking someone from the corner spot. Like, I think this year it's probably you could go six corners, four safeties. I could see that happening. Now, I'm not even counting Brandon Codrington. Brandon Codrington is a corner. This is a really fascinating one to me because, like, a lot of Bills fans, and maybe you guys too, I don't know, are not where I am on what the team feels about him and his spot. Like, I think Brandon Codrington is on this team unless somebody really shows that they can take the return job away. Because it's not going to be Khalil Shakir. They just gave him $58 million. He's your number one receiver. Like, he's break glass in case of emergency, like in the playoffs, have a guy you can trust guy back there. That's for sure. But, like, Brandon Codrington factors in here because he's a corner, but he's also, like, your number one punt returner. And that is a really super-duper important job for the Buffalo Bills and the way to do this. So what do the numbers look like? Right. To me, it's Taylor Rapp, Cole Bishop. I think Derek Forrest has a job in this team because he's a special teams guy that they really like that they could put in there. And Cam Lewis, they love Cam Lewis. Like, Brandon Bean said last year, Cam Lewis, and I believe him, like, he made reference to Cam Lewis would be a starter at nickel corner on almost any other team in this league. That's how much they love him.
Plus, Codrington does both. Like, you have punts and kickoffs in one player.
Chenault does not return punts. He doesn't have one single punt return to his credit. So if somebody out there was thinking just now, oh, but Sal, they signed Chenault, he's going to replace Codrington, he doesn't return punts.
And by the way, just while we have Sal, I think of this often, but I don't think I've ever said it. I heard it said how a kickoff return is like a running play and a punt return is like a receiving play. And I wondered if you've ever heard that or thought about that. I get it in terms of the kickoff return. The guy gets the ball, and he's got time to line up blocks and try to, you know, figure out holes and angles where the punt returner, it's kind of like catch it and look out. They're on you pretty quick.
Yeah, I haven't heard the second part about that as much, but I think more and more, and especially with the new rules, certainly, you know, a kick return is like a running play for sure. And, you know, with the new rules, they're like the Bills are going to use two kick returners. And I don't think Laviska Shenault really factors in here unless he, oh my God, you got to keep this guy. He's unbelievable at kick returns. But they're going to use two kick returners. They're going to have a main punt returner. And you're right, Bulldog, he does both. So you're using the guy for both things. And then your other guy can be a Ty Johnson. It could be a Ray Davis. They can be the second kick returner there. But I think it all factors in the numbers-wise, and that's how you start to get to, well, who's the odd guy or odd guys out in this situation?
Right. I'm saying that definitively about Shenault. For all I know, he's fielding punt after punt out of a jugs machine since he signed here, but he has zero punt returns in his NFL career so far. So I'm saying he can't do it. Really, what I should be saying is he hasn't done it. If that changes because he's reading the tea leaves here and sees the landscape, like, I need to add this in order to make sure I get a spot, then, you know, maybe they give that a try in the summer. I don't know, but he just has not done that in the NFL yet.
Good luck. That might be hard to pick up.
Yeah, I would think. By the way.
What's that?
I don't think he did in college.
Okay, right.
Colorado.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Very good. Sal, enjoy your time away, and we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks a lot.
That's our dude Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker, Carl Jones in here with you until 3 o'clock. We are pleased now to be joined by Pro Football Focus NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. He's also the co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. Trevor, thanks for coming in with us. You're with Steve and Carl. Appreciate you taking the time. Love some of the content you've been putting out. Some of it is kind of timely. I never think about this, and then when you did this article about coordinators, it's always a little bit timely because we got new head coaches in the league. Like, the Detroit Lions lost both their coordinators this year, Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, to different head coaching positions. The Bills have lost a coordinator in the recent past as Brian Daboll went to the New York Giants. It's a thing, right? So you put out a list of guys that maybe we should keep our eyes on about getting head coaching jobs. Give us the gist of that.
Yeah, so I mean, Joe Brady's on that list, right? And he has to be as the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, you look at it since he has taken over, really, as the interim, you know, offensive coordinator and then full-time offensive coordinator, the Bills have been number one. They've had the number one EPA per pass in the NFL over the last year and a half, and they've had the number two EPA per rush. And anytime you have that type of success, of course, the teams in the NFL are going to want a piece of that. And so, you know, I think what's working for Joe Brady as well is, and I say this in the article, he's not unfamiliar to this spotlight, right? You go all the way back to 2019, he was the pass game coordinator for LSU. He wasn't even the play caller and the offensive coordinator, and yet he was talked about as sort of this next hotshot NFL offensive coordinator that was going to become an NFL head coach. And obviously with him getting his first stint as an offensive coordinator with Matt Rhule in Carolina, it felt like we jumped the shark a little bit early there. But I feel like he could be ready now, especially if it's another year where things are going great. And of course, Josh Allen is all-world talented. There's no doubt about that. But anytime you have this level of success on the offensive side of the ball, and specifically with a talented quarterback, like I said, other teams are going to want to get in on the mix of that, because a lot of these teams that are going to be hiring head coaches, there's a chance that they've either got young quarterbacks or just they're about to be drafting quarterbacks, and so they're going to want somebody who knows what it's like to have that sort of relationship where you have that success with a really important position. So Brady is one of those guys that it feels like we've talked about him a handful of times throughout the last 5 or 6 years, but man, if the Bills have the year that we think that they're going to have, those discussions and his name is going to be at the top of the list when it comes to head coaching candidates.
I'm sure Bills fans are ecstatic that you're talking about their offensive coordinator in this light, but a little bitter as well that when you speak of him this way, that means he's probably going to leave soon. But do you think it's a foregone conclusion, let's say if they're top five again in EPA per play, that he is gone? Because looking at Ben Johnson, he stayed a third year in Detroit and tried to find his best case scenario that ended up being Caleb Williams in Chicago. For Bills fans out there, if the Bills are successful again, do you think it's foregone conclusion Joe Brady's gone?
I don't think it's a guarantee, and you brought up the right example, right? You brought up Ben Johnson, who over the last 2 to 3 seasons has had the opportunity to be a head coach elsewhere, and I think that we've often operated under the thought process that if you're a coordinator and you get a head coaching gig, that you're just going to leave. Like, that's what's going to happen. But we have seen before that that's now not a guarantee, and if the situation is not right, not only are there – I think that – we go back to the way that they say it, where it's like, oh, there's only 32 of these jobs in the world, 32 head coaching jobs in the National Football League. And so when you have the opportunity to get one, you got to jump on it. But if it's to a situation that's not ideal or one that you really think could be such an uphill climb that it might be, you know, it might be Mount Everest, it might be too much to overcome, then all of a sudden, all you're really doing is you're putting yourself in a bad situation to have a bad record as a head coach and not get that second contract as a head coach and obviously be able to stick around the league. So I think Ben Johnson kind of gave you a little bit of a blueprint of, yeah, okay, it's more likely than not they do leave, but it's not a 100% slam dunk guarantee.
There are others as well. Joe Brady's not the only offensive coordinator out there that's turning heads. What are some others that Bills fans might know or have some interest in? And there's other, I mean, this question goes on and on. Like, what happens to the Detroit Lions this year with two new coordinators, right? I mean, do they continue to win games? But as for, you know, the coordinators on the radar now, what are some of the names that Bills fans might recognize or maybe not recognize?
Yeah, some other guys that I think are going to be up there with Joe Brady if they have successful years for head coaching gigs on the offensive side of the ball. I wrote in this article, you know, Cliff Kingsbury's got to be one of them, right? He's somebody who, again, sort of like Joe Brady, the last 5 or 6 years we've talked about him as a potential head coach. Obviously, he was a head coach when he was with the Arizona Cardinals, but even before then, long before then, and even after his time with the Cardinals, people have been saying, like, hey, is he going to make the jump? Is he going to be a head coach? Even with 1 year of success with Jaden Daniels last year, it was like, hey, is Cliff going to take the jump to be a head coach again? And I think that that's probably coming, but I think that Cliff Kingsbury is looking at that similarly to sort of the conversation that we just had, where he's not just going to take any head coaching opening. It's got to be the right one. I think another one is Chip Kelly. You know, Chip Kelly has been a 2-time head coach in this league, first with the Philadelphia Eagles and then with the San Francisco 49ers. And he went to UCLA after that and had a couple of years at UCLA where I thought they were fine, but it clearly was not enough to get him those job opportunities that he wanted to get back in the league. So last year, he ended up leaving UCLA, going to Ohio State to not even be their head coach, but be their offensive coordinator. So taking a step down, if you will. But obviously being a national championship offensive coordinator comes with its perks too. And now he's back in the league as the offensive coordinators for the Las Vegas Raiders. And so if he has another good year there, I think that just his resume is going to be too much. You're going to be get these teams that really want to perform well on that side of the ball. And so I would say those are two guys in the league right now that in a long-term look, when you're looking more towards next offseason, I can predict those guys, if they have great seasons again, they're going to be in the head coaching conversations.
You do a lot of fantastic work over at Pro Football Focus, especially in the draft community. The Bills' theme of their draft this year, big people, especially big people that play on the defensive side of the ball. Was there a pick in particular that you're really excited to see and how they progress into their career in the National Football League?
Honestly, I'm a big Landon Jackson guy. Like, I really do love Landon Jackson. I feel as though he is the same archetype as sort of what they drafted with AJ Epenesa. And I think AJ Epenesa has been fine for them, but I think maybe they would have wanted the ceiling to be a little bit higher, see a little bit more production. I feel as though that could be the case with Landon Jackson, who I've really liked watching how he developed first as a really good run defender, and now he is blossoming into a good pass rusher as well. He brings you great length, great size. He can play everything from basically a 7-technique stand-up outside linebacker, and of course you can reduce him inside to a 5-technique and a 4-eye-technique type of a player, whether you want to be an even or an odd front. So I think that I really like that Landon Jackson pick. Obviously, the one that people talk about a ton is Deion Walker, right? If Deion Walker kind of pans out for them, what a steal that would be getting him in day 3 in the 4th round. And so they say, of course, he can't teach that size and what he brings to the table in that regard. If he is able to blossom and sort of be that versatile interior defender where he can play that 3-4 defensive end spot for you, he can play as a nose tackle for you. It's just a matter of him. For me, it was always a matter of, I felt like he wasn't really playing in shape. And I don't know, this might not be all him. You know what? Sometimes Kentucky's like, hey, we want you to be a little bit heavier. We want you to be able to play this position. And you can see guys get to the NFL, and sometimes these NFL strength and conditioning coaches and nutritionists and everything say, whoa, okay, no. You've been carrying a little bit too much weight. Let's hone in on that the right way. Let's get you to a really healthy weight. And that's what I hope we can see from Deion Walker, because not only will that help him be healthy, which we learned after the draft that he was kind of struggling with a back injury throughout all of last year, but it'll allow him to play at an optimal level when it comes to that strength and speed. So I think those two guys along the defensive line are the ones that I'm looking at.
Who do you think, as we head into training camp, who do you think the Bills' best defensive player is?
Wow. I think it probably off the top of my head, I would probably say it's Greg Rousseau, right? I love what Rousseau is able to bring to the table. This is somebody who, when I was scouting him at Miami, I was just, you know, blown away by what he was able to do as a nose tackle, as a three technique, as a five technique. I mean, he was just able to do so many different things, and it feels as though the Bills give him that freedom to be able to do that week in and week out, and he's such a chess piece for their defensive line. Obviously, Matt Milano, when he is healthy, he is fantastic. Christian Benford has been excellent for them as well, but man, it's that versatility of what Greg Rousseau brings to that defensive line that that I love so much about what they can do and how flexible they can be every single week.
Is there a player on the defensive side of the ball that you want to see take a leap into that next tier, that tier, that top 10, top 15 at their position that would help propel the defense going forward?
Sure. I mean, you know, if you have a player like Ed Oliver's the first one that comes to my mind, to be honest with you, because, you know, he is somebody who when I was scouting him at a Houston, it's like, man, this guy has just such unique quickness. He's such a mismatch in that regard. He's a little bit smaller, but that comes with a leverage advantage for how strong he is as well. I feel like Ed Oliver has been solid, and there are times when he has been really good and giving you some impactful play, but he hasn't taken that leap into being that consistent, disruptive one of the guys that we talk about often when we're talking about some of the best defensive tackles in the league. I feel as though they're really trying to put together a defensive line that allows guys like Oliver to get a lot of one-on-one situations where he can really thrive. And so I would love to see him sort of take that next step, be more of that speed rusher, utilize a lot of the physical gifts that he has. And so Ed Oliver is probably the first one that comes to my mind that I'd love to see him take a leap this year.
One of the topics that we've had as Bills fans in this radio station is James Cook this offseason, mostly because of his contract. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get into the economics of it. I'm just going to ask you, where does he rank in the hierarchy of running backs in the National Football League? How good is he? What is his top end? What is the perception of him outside of the Bills locker room?
If I remember correctly, I believe that we had him as a top 20 back. I can't remember exactly where he came in on our running back rankings this offseason, but he is somebody who, the best part about him is he gives you that game-breaking high-ceiling ability, right? Like, sometimes you'll watch James Cook, and sometimes it's not always like, hey, okay, he'll always give you the 4 or 5 yards per carry. Sometimes it'll be a little bit less, but he will give you those home run hitting spots. And so when you have a deep running back rotation like the Bills have, you want to have a player who could be a feature and dynamic player for you. And so there are other backs in the league that I think, you know, maybe they'll deal with contact a little bit better. Maybe they have those yards after contact or just yards per attempt averages that are a little bit better. Maybe their floor is a little bit higher every single time they touch the ball. But what I loved a lot about James Cook coming out of Georgia is I liked him first and foremost as a receiver, what he could be as a receiver out of the backfield, how sharp his route were when matched up against linebackers. I still think that exists for his game. And for running backs, you talk about the economics part of it. You have to bring value in the passing game. You have to. That is how you get that second contract, that you get teams to stick around with you. Not only are you great when you put the ball in your gut and you're able to, you know, take it deep and have those home run balls and showcase great athletic ability, you have to be a plus in the pass game as well. And it feels like James Cook is and can be that for you. And so that's a big part of that offense as well. And so, again, I can't remember exactly where he ranked on our running back rankings, but he is one of the more dynamic backs in the NFL. And it certainly doesn't hurt when you rush behind an offensive line that we had ranked third ranked offensive line in the NFL for just how good and how great the chemistry is with the Buffalo Bills offensive line. That not only goes for when Josh Allen has the football, but of course, when a guy like James Cook has it as well.
You had him ranked 12th in your ranking, so clearly an above-average back
there we go.
In the National Football League. I do want to pivot to the receivers on the outside. You had them ranked 19th. Now, they've made some changes, mm-hmm. bringing in a Josh Palmer. They also added Elijah Moore later in the offseason. The offensive line's ranked 3rd. James Cook's ranked 12th. I presume Josh Allen is no lower than 2 or 3.
Sure.
Are there any concerns with the wide receivers heading into the season? Do you think they've done enough to keep the offense at this elite level?
So I think that they've done enough with one caveat. Keon Coleman has to take the step. Like, in my opinion, if Keon Coleman becomes your wide receiver one, everything's going to look great in Buffalo. If he is your wide receiver one, if he is your on the line of scrimmage, X caliber type of guy who can beat press coverage and win in the red zone, and he could just be that 1,000-yard wide receiver one for you, well, then all of a sudden, Khalil Shakir being a high volume, short yardage guy, you love that. Josh Palmer could be a deep threat for you. You have the tight ends as well. And I mentioned some of the running backs, including obviously James Cook coming out of the backfield. It all looks so much better if Keon Coleman is that wide receiver one. Now, when you look at how they played last year, and it was Coleman's rookie season, but there wasn't a single wide receiver outside of Khalil Shakir that had a receiving grade for the year above a 70. So Khalil Shakir was the only one, I believe it was around an 80.7, if I remember off the top of my head correctly. So you feel great about what you have with Shakir, but you need that player who puts fear in the eyes and the hearts of the defense, especially those secondary players. Coleman has that ability to do that. So even though would I say that it's the best wide receiver room in the NFL? No. I think that it is exactly what the Buffalo Bills would need to give themselves a legitimate chance to get to and win a Super Bowl if Coleman can be the guy who could take that next step. So that would be my answer to that.
You obviously scouted Coleman coming out of the draft. I guess what type of player do you think he projects to be at his ceiling?
Yeah, I mean, he has that wide receiver one type of ceiling. Really explosive athlete, great jump ball wide receiver, and absolute alpha at the catch point. And this is what you want. These are things that you want from a X type of wide receiver, somebody who knows how to win on the line of scrimmage with good releases, with strength, who can get off of press coverage, somebody who could win in the red zone when your space is at a premium, if you will. The question with Coleman and what worried me about him, why he wasn't my wide receiver one that year, was because as much as I loved a lot of what he was athletically, he didn't translate that athletic ability into separation scores. A lot of his production and what we saw when he was at Florida State and even at Michigan State was winning in contested catch close coverage situations. Now, you ooh and ah when you're able to go above the rim and absolutely moss somebody, and those are big-time highlight plays, but it sure is a lot easier when you can create a consistent window of separation for your quarterback to be able to hit. That's a little bit easier. That's the next step for Coleman. That is what holds the key to him being that wide receiver one type of player that the Bills would need for this wide receiver room. So that's sort of what my scouting report was of him when he was coming out of Florida State and what I'd love to see from him in his second year this year.
And now that we've honed down on the roster, let's step back and take a look at the big picture. Look at the Bills' schedule. They're playing the NFC South, the AFC North, and, of course, the AFC East. You ranked the divisions, and you had the AFC East as the seventh-ranked division in the NFL, which is next to the bottom. Outside of the Bills, I kind of might have to agree with you. But how's it look for the Bills and plowing through the NFC South, the AFC North, the AFC East, and playing a first-place schedule? This is we've talked about it a lot, obviously, Trevor. The season and the schedule kind of lay out very nicely for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, no, they absolutely do, especially looking at it right now. I haven't had the chance to really look at it, and I see it on the screen there. I mean, you get the Chiefs not only after the bye, but okay, you play the Panthers after that. I think the Panthers are going to be better this year, but then you get the Chiefs and you get them at home. Obviously, you get the Bengals at home as well. So those two teams and the Ravens at home, I see that as well. So you get the three toughest teams in that division that you have to play. You're getting all of them at home, and a lot of the away games are against, you know, teams that you feel like you're going to have a pretty good advantage against. And the division, yeah, I mean, the division is one of the easier divisions, if there is such a thing in the NFL, that we have here. And it's been the Bills at the very top for the last, you know, 5-6 years, and it feels like it's going to be that again. You know, depending on what you think of the New England Patriots and what you think of the Jets this season, I think those teams are going to be good, but are they really going to be extremely competitive when it comes to the win and loss column against the Buffalo Bills? I don't think so, especially when I look at this schedule the way that it is. I'm even just noticing right now they're playing the Eagles, and they're getting the Eagles at home. And so it's definitely a favorable schedule. It's a year where I think that a lot of those young guys and those new additions, you can realistically expect those guys to step up. And Matt Milano is a big deal for this team, right? If Matt Milano is fully healthy and he's given you at least, like, you know, one more great year in him, I know he's getting a little bit older, but if he's got another fantastic Matt Milano-esque type of a season, I really do think that one seed is within range for them, and you can realistically predict them to be a Super Bowl caliber team, especially when you look at that schedule. I really do.
When you look around the division, Patriots, Dolphins, and the Jets, what do you make of what Miami did this offseason? Trading away Jalen Ramsey, bringing back Minka Fitzpatrick, taking a defensive tackle at 13 overall, then trading up for a guard in the second round. They've done a lot of peculiar things this offseason. Mm-hmm. I want to hear from someone else that's outside of Western New York. What do you think of what they've done?
I don't love what Miami has done this offseason, and I think it starts to spell out a rebuild much more than it does a deep playoff run and really hitting the gas in this current winning window. I wonder if they look at their current situation and they just go, you know what, we tried, but the injury luck bit them bad, and it's just really unfortunate sort of what's happened with a couple of their great pass rushers, obviously Tua Tagovailoa as well, the offensive line getting Teron Armstead, and then him being hurt, and now he's not even there anymore. But it just feels as though a lot of the chips that they had in the pot, it did not go the way that they wanted it to. And I think there's a reason why these couple of moves that Miami has made over the last week or so, when it's involved draft picks, it's involved 2027 draft picks. And I think that there's a reason for that. And the reason why is because I went and I looked up a lot of the contract situations that they have on the team. And Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jalen Phillips, Jalen Ramsey, obviously, Tyreek Hill, and then if you go to Tua Tagovailoa as well, you could throw in Teron Armstead because they're paying him a little bit now that he's gone, but you get that off the books as well. All of those contracts and a lot of that guaranteed money and all of those, their highest paid contracts, is flexible and or off the books by 2027. And I wonder if Miami looks at this situation and I wonder if they just go, we tried with this current regime, but I'm not so sure that unless they make a deep playoff run this year, unless they at least win that first wild card weekend matchup, which I would assume that if they're going to make it, they're going to make it as a wild card team. Unless they win that matchup, and then maybe they've even got to win another one. I don't know if this current build of the Miami Dolphins is for the long haul. I think that instead this team is maybe one foot out the door a little bit and realizing that, hey, we might as well hit reset and maybe be able to time when the Buffalo Bills aren't at the very peak of the division. Maybe try to time a year where they take a little bit of a step back, because I just don't know if that's going to happen over the next couple of years, and Miami just doesn't feel like they're going in that direction.
The two other teams in the division, the New England Patriots and the New York Jets, both brand new head coaches, although Vrabel is a guy that came up from Tennessee and had a pretty good, what I thought was a pretty good run in Tennessee with the Titans. Aaron Glenn, really one of the hottest names in the coaching market, who's not been a head coach coming in this year's hiring cycle. Which one of those guys do you like the situation better? Which one is set up for more success?
Well, I think that the Jets might be set up for more success this coming year, but they're going to be an interesting case study because, man, I think they're going to run the football a lot. You know, I think you look at this offensive line, you obviously look at Breece Hall. It's a major year for him. It's a crucial year there. You sign Justin Fields, and Justin Fields, I think, is getting better as a passer, but he's, you know, somebody who's able to give you a lot of threat with what he can do with his legs and sort of an RPO and a dual threat rushing offense. I just think that the Jets are going to run the ball a lot. They're going to control the clock a lot. They're going to try to win with their defense. And it's going to be a very Aaron Glenn style type of team, in my opinion. They're going to try to beat you up front in the trenches. And I think that, again, that will make for a competitive team. Will that make for a playoff team? I'm not so convinced there. I think the goal should more be sort of that 500 mark than anything else. For the Patriots, I think the goal is probably similar for them. You're hoping that Drake May really takes that next step up, but really you're just hoping the offensive side of the ball looks a lot better. They've got Josh McDaniels. Not only do they have Mike Vrabel, an experienced head coach, they've got Josh McDaniels back as that offensive coordinator. And so, you know, with him being back there, somebody who's done it for such a long time, you hope that that veteran voice is great for a young quarterback in Drake May. You hope the offensive line is night and day different than it was last year. It was the lowest graded offensive line that we had at PFF in 2024. You're hoping that the wide receiver room looks a lot better. I do think the defense is going to be much, much better with their free agency additions and their draft additions there in New England. And then certainly any Mike Vrabel team that we have seen coached over the last 5 or 6 years, you know that they play with sort of his mentality and his style, and that's a successful one. So I think that both of those teams are going to be good, or competitive, I should say. But, you know, when it comes to them taking the crown from the Bills, I don't quite see that.
What do you make of Drake May if everything works out for him around him?
I love Drake May. Drake May was my QB2 behind Caleb Williams in the class 2 years ago. I think he's supremely talented. In his 2 years that he started with North Carolina, he had elite passing grades. He had some of the most big-time throws in all of college football. I believe there was no quarterback who had more big-time throws in that two-year sample size of what May was when he was just a true sophomore and a true junior. And so he's a younger prospect. He's a gunslinger type of a player. You knew that probably his first year as a starter, whenever that was going to come, whether it was a rookie or his sophomore year, whatever that looked like, it was going to come with its ups and downs, and it definitely has. But I think that a positive for Drake May is that he showcased a lot of athleticism. You guys see there on the screen what he was as a rusher. He had an above 80 rushing grade last season as a quarterback, and I think that when things weren't working well for him, when the protection wasn't holding up, when he didn't have the wide receivers to throw to, he was able to take off, and he was able to show you he's got a little bit of scoot to him, too. He's a good enough athlete to keep the defenses honest. Anytime you play man coverage and you got your back to the quarterback, he can sometimes make you pay because of that. So I think he's a very high ceiling type of a quarterback, absolutely a franchise caliber guy. And now we've got a much, much better and more stable situation for him to work around. And so, again, maybe it's not playoffs for them this year, but I think the playoffs are coming at some point with Drake May in New England.
Pro Football Focused NFL draft analyst, also co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange podcast, Trevor Sikkema. Thanks for joining us, man. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
So up 3-1, a leadoff double here in the sixth, and here's Addison Barcher over two. And Barcher hits a fly ball to deep right field, and this one is gone. Their third home run of the game. Number 12 on the season for Addison Barcher. It is 5-1.
Yeah, have you been following the Blue Jays at all? This is a pretty redundant sound because they are just smashing the ball and mashing the ball. And it didn't really start with the Yankees series, but it really was a part of it. The Yankees series, they swept the Yankees. They take over first place. the Yanks are staring up at them right now. And right now, the Blue Jays are kind of the talk of baseball. They're in Chicago now. They're taking on the White Sox in a series there. They've won, what, 9 in a row? And joining me right now on the West Her Hotline to talk about the Yankees, the Blue Jays, and baseball as we do every week is my buddy Sal Majorana from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. And also, of course, the publisher and writer and all things Pinstripe People newsletter on the Yankees, which right now is kind of taking a blowtorch to what the Yankees are or aren't doing. Good morning, Sal. Good to talk with you. I wish it was under better circumstances for the Yanks.
Yeah, that was one horrible week for the Yankees. Great one for the Blue Jays. Horrible one for the Yankees. Could sort of see it coming early in that series, Sal, that you could just tell the Blue Jays have really got it together. They've been playing good baseball for really about a month now. And it's all because of their offense. Their pitching really isn't all that impressive, but they've just been outscoring teams because their offense has been on fire. And you can tell, I mean, the Yankees have been sputtering before last week began when they went to Toronto, and it was easy to predict that Toronto would win probably 3 of the 4. They ended up getting all 4, and they haven't lost since. They've 8 in a row now, as it is for Toronto?
I think it's 9 after last night, yeah.
Yeah, 9
it's
after crazy. Last night. So, yeah, and the Yankees salvaged one game last week, the finale against the Mets. So a nice, lovely 1-6 week. It's unbelievable that they dropped basically 7 games in the standings between Toronto jumping up and the Yankees falling down in 1 week. That's pretty amazing.
It is. Let's stay on the Blue Jays a little bit. I mean, boy, George Springer is a Yankee killer, is he not? Holy cow. Oh. I went to a game last year. He had a couple of home runs, and he just torched them in this series. But this is a good player, a good hitter, obviously. But it's not just him. We just heard Addison Barger hit the home run. Bo Bichette, they did it without him for a little while. And, of course, there's Vlad Guerrero, who's not having the best year, but he's starting to heat up a little bit.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing about that series. You know, Sal, was that Guerrero really didn't do anything to hurt the Yankees. I think he might have had one home run in the series. I'm not even sure, but he was not really a factor, which he usually is against the Yankees. He's another one who's killed them through the years. Bo Bichette missed the first 3 games. I think he pinch hit in the last game. I don't even think he started the last game. He just happened to come in as a pinch hitter. So it wasn't the guys that they usually have had trouble stopping. Those two, of course, right at the top of the list. It was Springer, who just had, you know, a series among all series. It was incredible to watch. And, you know, we go back with him a long way, Sal, because he was part of that Astros team that had the Yankees number for all those years. So there is some legitimate hate built up for George Springer through the years, and he just killed him. And he's been having a great year. You know, he hadn't really, I don't think, you know, they signed him a few years ago, and he's been an okay player for them the first 2 years, but this year he really has found it, and he was great. And then this Barger kid, I never even heard of him until last week, and all of a sudden he's hitting balls all over the field. So, yeah, it was an impressive performance by the Blue Jays.
No doubt about it. Sal Majorana joining me here on the West Her Hotline. And the Yankees, of course, then they go from Toronto to back to New York, but this time to take on the Mets at Citi Field. And, boy, that was a disastrous first couple of days before they finally, as you said, salvaged that last game. But, boy, going to New York to play a Mets team that had been struggling, and I guess the best fix is to play the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, Sal, that was a ridiculous series for the Yankees. The Mets had lost. They had gone through a 3-13. You know, everyone talked about the Pirates series last week. And then, you know, they did get it back on track. They beat Milwaukee twice in the middle of the week, so they were starting to turn it around. But that Yankees series, Sal, there was just no excuse for the Yankees not to win at least 2 of those games. The Mets were starting some kid named Justin Hageman on Friday. I think he's a rookie. Frankie Montas started Saturday. I mean, this guy is a complete stiff. And then they went with an opener on Sunday, and the Yankees win that game, but barely. They had to hang on at the end to win it. There was no excuse for the Yankees to be outpitched. They had Rodon and Fried pitching in that series. I mean, Stroman, I didn't know what to expect, and he actually was okay. But you can't lose a Carlos Rodon against Frankie Montas game. And Max Fried, as great as he's been this year, he wasn't exactly great Sunday. He only got through 5 innings. He had the lead when he left. And the bullpen, which has been horrible, somehow found a way to get 12 outs. But That was a bad series. I don't care that they won the last game. That was a series they needed to win at least two of the three games.
Sal Majorana here. Pinstripe People is the Yankees newsletter. And, of course, Clark Schmidt. Boy, what are the? How do the Yankees recover from losing yet another pitcher who is obviously going to be gone for the rest of the year?
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, look, every team has injuries, especially to the pitcher. So I'm not going to – no one's going to give the Yankees, you know, any tissues here for that situation. But Clark Schmidt, it's really frustrating, Sal, because, as you know, he has just battled injuries his entire career. But when he's healthy, he's been really good. I mean, he has been a – especially the last couple years, he has been a really good, reliable pitcher for them. And he was off to a great start. He missed a little bit of time early. And then once he got back and into the groove this year, he's been pitching. I think he had a sub-3 ERA. Of course, he had the game a few weeks ago. He threw 7 no-hit innings. He's just been a really reliable middle-of-the-rotation guy, and now he's gone. So they basically have Fried and Rodon and 3 huge question marks every time they're in those games. They're going to bring up this kid named Cam Schlittler from AAA, who has been impressive, and the Yankees think he's got a great future, and he's going to get his chance now. And they really need him to come through because Will Warren is in this rotation. Marcus Stroman is in their rotation. I mean, it's a problem. So they need Schlittler to come up and be the guy the Yankees believe he can be.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on around the rest of the league. And, of course, you have the Yankees and their situation. Now they're going to be taking on the Mariners and Cal Raleigh. Where's Cal Raleigh come from here? There's a guy that now I'm like, he's just mashing the baseball. He's leading the American League in home runs, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, he's been a very good player for several years. But this power surge, I think, has caught everybody by surprise, especially from a catcher. I mean, you just don't see catchers hitting whatever he's got, 36, 37 so far. That's incredible before the All-Star break. So, yeah, he has been a great player for them. Now, the rest of their team, Sal, I mean, as usual, Seattle just kind of middles along, you know, and they've let the Astros take complete control of the AL West, which, of course, is not great news for Yankee fans either. The rest of their lineup is, I mean, they've got some good players. Crawford's a good shortstop, a really good leadoff hitter. Julio Rodriguez, everyone talks about this guy being a superstar. He has been anything but a superstar. I think he's one of the most overrated players in baseball, and he got an all-star berth when he really shouldn't have. So he hasn't really done too much for them. Where they've got it, Sal, is their pitching. I mean, they have a really good pitching staff. They just threw 3 straight shutouts over the weekend. Granted, it was the Pirates, but it was the same Pirates who scored 30 runs in 3 games against the Mets. So there was something to say there. Yankees are going to face 3 of their best pitchers in this series. So it's going to be a tough 3 days for this Yankees offense against Seattle.
Did I read right? Did Juan Soto not make the All-Star game?
Yeah. I mean, he did not make it so far. I mean, he'll probably get in. But he did not make the All-Star team. That was a little bit surprising. He's been good the last month. I mean, I think I read somewhere, Sal, in June, he had the second highest month's OPS in Mets history. That's pretty amazing. I mean, and he kind of did it quietly, it felt like, because he started so poorly. But he really has been on a tear. Then against the Yankees, he hit the home run in the first game. Didn't really do much of anything else, though. So he didn't make the All-Star team. I think he'll probably find a way to get in there once, you know, there's going to be 10 guys that are probably going to drop out. So I think he'll be there eventually.
What do you make of the Nationals firing Dave Martinez and general manager Mike Rizzo?
Yeah, I mean, kind of overdue, right, Sal? I mean, since they won the World Series, they've been one of the worst teams. In fact, they've been the second worst team in baseball. I think they have the second most losses in the sport after they won the World Series. So there's been a lot of disappointment there. And, you know, we're kind of familiar with the Nationals here in Rochester because we're the AAA affiliate. And I see a lot of these guys come through Rochester on their way to Washington. And this is just not a great farm system, especially pitching. They've had a couple position guys that have gone up. Obviously, James Wood made the All-Star team, really good player. They've had a few guys come through here that are pretty good players. But their pitching, their development of pitching has been terrible for years. We're seeing it now. The only guys who pitch well for them are guys they get in trades, like Mackenzie Gore. So, yeah, I mean, it was probably long overdue. It was funny how Rizzo took the shot at the Lerner family on his way out. And I do know there's something to that. That's a very, very poor ownership group. They've really made it difficult for the manager and the general manager there. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised at it. I was surprised by the timing of it with the Major League Draft coming up here in a week. It was a little surprising, but, yeah, probably long overdue.
And then I know you follow the Cubs a little bit in the National League, and they're pretty hot, too. They've won 7 of their last 10, now playing .600 baseball. That looks like a team that might be poised to make a little run here in the second half.
Yeah, Cubs have been really nice, a nice surprise this year. Their offense is one of the best in baseball. They're killing the ball.
Yeah.
Seiya Suzuki's got 74 RBIs, 77 RBIs, actually. Kyle Tucker's great.
Sal, have you seen their differential, their run differential? Have you looked at their run differential? I'm looking at it right now. It's plus 126.
Yeah, 126. Yeah, they're playing. Their offense has just been great, Sal. They're pitching, you know, they're going to have some problems with their pitching. They lost Justin Steele, who's one of their best pitchers for the year. A couple other guys, Jameson Taillon's now on the IL. So they've got some holes that they're going to have to address at the deadline. And Jed Hoyer, who's their, you know, president of baseball ops, he has said that they are going to spend money, which has been a thing with the Cubs. The Cubs have been a little bit of a tight budget team for a big market team, and it's frustrated Cubs fans for a long time. But he claims that they recognize an opportunity here, and they're going to try to go out and get some guys. So I hope they do. I hope they do it after they play the Yankees this weekend, because that's going to be a tough series for the Yankees, one that I always dread, Sal, when the Yankees play the Cubs. Because I do like the Cubs. They're my National League team, but, you know, the Yankees are still – they're still 1A. Yankees are 1A, and the Cubs are 1B for me.
All right, so I'm headed to Italy tomorrow. I'll be there for 10 days. You're going to – next week I'll get Derek and Zach on with you. Have you been to Italy before, Sal?
I have not. Matter of fact, my niece is there right now on her honeymoon. They went to Greece and they went to Italy. So my family has gone a couple times. I have not had the occasion to go. My wife keeps telling me that we have to at some point. So
yes, you do.
You know, I'm gonna have to find a way to do that here at some point. Once I retire, Sal.
Yeah, I think you should. Anyway, when I get back, it's only a couple days before training camp, and that's when we'll see each other again. July 23rd, the Bills open training camp right there at St. John Fisher University in Rochester. Sal, of course, will be covering Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. Is James Cook still the number one storyline for you headed to camp?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was lessened because he showed up for the mandatory minicamp. So I think that sets a precedent. He's going to be there. I think he realizes, go out, have a great year, make them, you know, give you a contract extension. And if they don't, you go to free agency. So I think that'll be his mindset. That's the only mindset he could truly have, Sal. He doesn't have an option. So show up, play, and prove to them who you are. And then maybe it'll be good enough to get Brandon Bean to give him an extension. So it's a storyline, but if he hadn't showed up last year in June, then it would have been a bigger storyline. But that kind of got diffused a little bit when he came in.
I agree with you. I think that as far as positions are concerned, probably cornerback number two opposite Christian Benford feels like the only spot that's really kind of up in the air. How do you view it going into camp?
Yeah, I was telling somebody when minicamp wrapped, you know, Tre'Davious White was getting a lot of run. And I have a feeling, Sal, that they're gonna stick with comfortability early in the season. Mm-hmm. And Trey White, I think, will get every chance to win that job and kind of keep the seat warm for Harrison. Now, if Harrison plays really good in camp and does well in the games, then he should be the starter. There's no doubt about it. But you know how McDermott operates. He trusts his veterans. He probably trusts no one, you know, more than Trey White, his initial draft pick. So it would be a surprise to me if Trey White's not the starter opening day, with the caveat that Max Harrison, you know, could get that job within, you know, the first half of the season if he plays well. That's kind of what I'm expecting to have happen.
Yeah, and on the offensive side, it feels like it's Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid. Kind of the, you know, what really is there other than James Cook's obvious contract situation? But, Sal, I mean, there's been nothing, no changes really in the offense. I know that Elijah Moore and Josh Palmer, and I guess that would be the only two changes. But other than that, this is just a kind of a machine that's just going to roll forward with. But it feels like those two guys, that's where everybody's focused on. You need more from at least one, if not both.
Absolutely. Those guys have a spotlight on them, more so Kincaid. I mean, Kincaid's his third year now. He needs to have a great year and, you know, get that fifth-year option exercise next spring. But that's a first-round pick, and they need to have him play like a first-round pick, and that was not the case last year. I understand he was injured, and I'll give him a pass for that. But this year he's coming in healthy, looks like he has a rejuvenated attitude, at least that's what it looked like in the spring sessions. He needs to be really good. He needs to be the guy they thought he was going to be. Keon Coleman, yeah, he needs to get open, Sal, right? That was the issue. He just did not have much success getting open against NFL defensive backs. So that has to improve. And you mentioned Palmer and Moore. I really like those two additions. I think, you know, everyone talks about that everybody eats mantra, and it gets a little bit tired sometimes. But, I mean, those two guys fit that to a T. They really do come in here with a couple of different skill sets. And I think as a whole, I like the Bills wide receiver group. I think they got a lot of guys who do different things. And when you've got Josh Allen as the trigger man, he can really take advantage of a lot of those skill sets.
The Yankees newsletter is called Pinstripe People. It is absolutely free. You can find it on the top of Sal's Twitter feed /X feed at Sal Marijuana. Now is a great time to sign up for it. It's always a great read, whether the Yankees are playing poorly or doing really well. You got a lot of stuff in there. It's not just about current Yankees baseball, but past Yankees baseball as well. Sal Marijuana on the Wester Hotline. All right, buddy. Next time I see you, we'll be in Rochester. We'll have Derek and Zach get in touch with you next week, and hopefully better times for the Yankees as they head to the All-Star break.
All right. Hey, you have a good trip. Enjoy yourself over there in the motherland, and we'll see you at training camp.
You got it. Sal Marijuana right there on the Wester Hotline on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.